Welcome to the Voice Weekly Podcast from the Voice of San Francisco, a nonprofit, independent news source for the city by the bay. I'm John Zipperer, editor of the Voice of San Francisco.
I'm Melissa Kane, political analyst, lawyer, and all-around nerd. Now, this week, we're looking into a new state law set to go into effect July 1st that has many restaurant owners worried and many diners unsure about how it's going to affect their bill. Now, the law at the center of this controversy is SB 478. It was authored by East Bay State Senator Nancy Skinner and her colleague, Napa Senator Bill Dodd. In short, it's supposed to ban businesses from charging what are called junk fees or presenting artificially low prices by burying added costs to the consumer.
In the restaurant world, that would include those notes you see on your menus and your bills stating that a certain percentage has been added to the cost of your meal to cover things ranging from city health mandates to tip supplements. Back in September, after the California Assembly passed the bill, Senator Dodd released a statement saying that for too long, Californians have been hit with dishonest charges being tacked on to seemingly everything.
The Office of Attorney General Rob Bonta, who sponsored the bill, said in October that, quote, hidden required fees are now charged for a variety of goods and services, such as lodging, tickets for live events, and restaurants and food delivery. These fees, when mandatory, are a deceptive way of hiding the true price of a good or service, unquote. So will this new law help consumers, and will it hurt restaurant owners and their employees? Will restaurants succeed in getting a carve out in this legislation like some other parties received?
To get some of these answers, we're talking with Lori Thomas. She's a longtime restaurant owner and the executive director of the Golden Gate Restaurant Association.
Lori Thomas, thanks so much for joining us today on the podcast.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Before we get into SB 478, could you give us a bit of a lay of the land about how the how the restaurant business is doing in San Francisco post-COVID? Is it healthy? I've heard it's been a rough year.
Yeah, it's mixed. You know, I know that's not the answer everybody wants, but I think it really depends where your restaurant is located in the city and what type of restaurant or cafe you're offering, what you're offering to the consumer, and also who is your purchaser? Were you relying on lunch business in the financial district? Were you relying on folks working at home and coming into your cafe in a neighborhood restaurant? Were you relying on conference customers?
And can you tell us a little bit about the Golden Gate Restaurant Association and what kinds of restaurants you represent and that you're here speaking on behalf of?
Sure. So the Golden Gate Restaurant Association is 88 years old. It was actually founded in 1936 by a bunch of restaurateurs in the Fisherman's Wharf area. I have been a member of the Restaurant Association for, God, almost 20 years now, probably, joined as a restaurateur member operator and have taken over the executive director job. I took it over right before the pandemic hit, which has been a fascinating ride. But we represent probably about 800 locations in San Francisco. That is clearly not all of the food service operators that hold permits by any means. It is usually independent restaurants. We do have some of the larger San Francisco group restaurants, but usually if you look at a profile of our membership, they're folks with 2 to 3 restaurants or even one restaurant or food trucks or catering. And we're here to really help just restaurants survive and hopefully to thrive again. And we do that through advocacy, through promoting events, through helping promote training programs and access to HR manuals, through hosting an industry conference so folks can come together, networking events, that type of thing. We're a very small nonprofit trade organization with 3 people on our staff. Yeah.
So tell us, what would SB 478 actually do? And why is it of concern to so many restaurants?
Well, we're not sure what it's supposed to actually do because we haven't seen any written FAQs yet. And I've been asking since a call on October 27th with a bunch of the Attorney General's team and some representatives from both Senator Dodd and Senator Skinner's team. And now we're, 7 months after that? This bill had a delayed implementation date of July 1st. I'm not sure why, but I'm guessing because it was a complicated change to the Consumer Code 1770. We don't hold, we, the GGRA, doesn't have an office in Sacramento. As I said, there's two other people on my staff, including me. We normally focus on San Francisco things, although during the pandemic, we certainly tried to help everybody get the federal relief and things like that. So we didn't really take a point at this. The California Restaurant Association is usually really good and on top of this. And they were told that this wouldn't affect restaurants. You'd have to interview them directly. So I don't want to put words in their mouth, but there were discussions, and that's why there wasn't an active opposition campaign from the restaurants. You will see that third-party delivery got a carve out. Lots of other industries got a carve out because they had their lobbyists at the table. So I am not really sure what happened, but I think it's unfortunate because there was one sort of intent that was articulated that, hey, if restaurants, and I just want to be crystal clear, and we have said this and we have published this, nobody should ever mislead the consumer. Ever, period. It bothers me when I go to a resort and I don't know about a fee, or I'm trying to purchase a ticket and I get to the end and there's literally hundreds of dollars of fees. We don't do that, and we shouldn't do that. And any operator in California that doesn't clearly list whatever their service charge is or surcharge, they're the same things, whether it's for gratuity. When I was a kid 50 years ago, we'd go out as a family. There would be an auto gratuity on the bill for a party of six or more. This has been done for decades in this industry. And it would go to help tip out the servers and things like that. Or the more recently seen service charges for things like to help offset the HCSO, which is the healthcare ordinance that has real costs of 5% usually, depending, plus administration fees to conform to that ordinance, to pay the employees to do that stuff from healthcare. Surcharges were one way to sort of help bring in additional dollars to pay those costs. We're not sure if this bill is going to say, hey, even if you clearly list something on your menu, you can't do it anymore. Or whether it's going to say, well, yes, as long as it's clearly listed, we even offered in the same font size on every page of the menu. And there hasn't been any real clarity around that. There was going to be. And I think because of the press, which you guys always help in educating a lot of folks about stuff that people don't know, there's been a much more awareness, certainly at the state level, that this could be a problem for our industry.
Well, it's not surprising that it's confusing. The law itself regulates advertising and says you, in an advertisement, you have to include surcharges. And this is not, I'm a lawyer, but this is not my area of the law. It took me about 3 seconds to find a very recent case that says menus are not advertising.
That's correct. But the language of the bill was changed.
Did they change the bill to apply to more than advertising?
So the language of the bill, again, there were several changes in the bill, but the text that seems to keep getting referred to as a possible confusion, and I am with you. I'm not a lawyer, but I should have been. That's my one regret. I didn't get a law degree in addition to a business degree. That does change and add line item 29 into the code, which wasn't there before, that states advertising, displaying, or offering a price for a good or service that does not include all mandatory fees or charges other than the following of taxes or postage or carriage charges won't be allowed.
So that's
there,
the one.
There is the confusion.
Right.
This, to the best of my knowledge, I am not a lawyer, full disclosure. This line item 29 was not in the code before.
Well, and it looks like it's something that, you know, if they want to be explicit about menus, because again, there are these cases.
But they don't say menus. We don't see menus in the code at all. So that's one hope from the restaurant community.
Right. You would hope that they would say clearly, reversing case law by saying now going forward, we're going to have menus be included as a form of advertising. So it is confusing. And my understanding from reading other articles is that you guys weren't able to get a straight answer about this until very recently when Attorney General Bonta said, oh, yes, it does apply.
I don't know that Attorney General Bonta has actually said that because we have not heard who the direct source was in the AG's office. So I don't want to say that he has specifically said that. I have not heard that. All we have heard is, and you've seen the press, is from the print media, that they were told that there was going to be a release of the FAQs. I was also told that directly from a contact in the AG's office who is not the attorney general, that, hey, heads up, we're going to be releasing this May 1st. Because of the press, and then I think perhaps the press based on what we saw written, right? I can't speak on the reporter's behalf, felt that they were told that it was going to be interpreted said way, right? And that's where all the press has come from, and we still haven't seen clarification. Now, the restaurant community, to a T, basically all of our members and our board and everything, would like to see that restaurants continue to have the ability to conduct business as has been done for a long time, so long as nobody is misled, right? It should be crystal clear. If consumers can tell that there's an 8.625% sales tax added on, then this is really no different, so long as it is clearly said on the menu in a readable, legible way. That's the restaurateur's perspective. Now, why? Because if you go back, and I've been Googling like price elasticity studies for the weekend, you know, this is where sugar taxes and cigarette taxes came from. We know that if things cost more, consumers will spend less. And so the concern is, if you are able to raise your price, and that's a whole nother discussion, because there are some industries that are constrained from raising their prices, say a bookstore, that you're going to have some issues with folks that have to spend more for certain ordinances. But my point being, everyone's like, well, why not just raise your prices, Lori, right? You, the restaurateur. And I'm like, well, that, sure, people could do that. Or the people that have gone to the all-in service model to pay their employees equally or more equally, a higher per hour rate, will now have to maybe go back to the old tipping model. Because who wants to raise your prices 20 to 25%?
And as I understand, there's a limited amount of time to get clarity on what's happening, because this law goes into effect July 1st, correct?
Yeah, like I mentioned, we've been having these conversations since October, November, yeah. December, January, February, March, April, May. That's 7 months. And thank God it had a 9-month delay built into it, right? I don't know where that came from, but that was great. But now, yeah, everything is coming down to an understanding of that this could be devastating to the restaurant industry. Now, there are talks at the federal level to get rid of junk fees. We've heard President Biden say that in his State of the Union. I know that the National Restaurant Association is involved at the federal level, as are some other organizations. My understanding is that everybody understands that the point was hidden fees or junk fees or got-you fees, right? And if anybody is doing that now, before this takes effect, that's not legal, right? You have to disclose stuff, I believe.
Is there a certain kind of restaurant that this is going to impact more than others in terms of their size or location?
Like I said, it depends how they're using the service model now. If they have gone, and you saw many people mention the press, I don't want to call anybody out, but if they have gone to an all-in exclusive model in order to do what they've said, to better, say, pay out the back of the house, the kitchen employees or the bussers, or more equal to the servers who traditionally got the tips and then tipped out whoever. If they've gone to that model, they will have a massive change. Because what do? Go cut the hourly wages that you're paying. So you have two choices. You go back to the tip model and you hope that the tips make up the difference and that you can tell your team, hey, you got to tip out the kitchen too, which is now legal. Or you raise your prices that 20% and you hope that you capture the same amount of revenue, which we all know won't happen for a while, right? In the cases of San Francisco, where you see a 4 to 6% service charge, say for healthcare or whatever, that will need to be absorbed somehow as well. But, you know, people were already that I've been talking to, and accountants who represent numerous restaurants in the city, people were already scheduling a price increase around July because minimum wage goes up. And also folks like our friends at SFPUC who decided to raise water prices, you know, 10% each year, or 9.6% or whatever it is, essentially 10% every July. That'll go up too. We know PG&E just came up. We know that all of our food costs came up. You guys saw what happened to the gas prices in the past couple months. Guess how that gets passed through? That gets passed right through to us on a delivery fuel charge for everything we get to run a restaurant. Food, beverages, linen, cleaning, garbage went up. Recology has been better with the rates this year. I will give you that. They are a good partner, but everything keeps going up.
This might be a dumb question. I don't know. But so the third party delivery services got a carve out. Mm-hmm. So if I order the same food from a restaurant through a delivery service, under this law, as we think we understand it right now, I would be paying service fees to Uber Eats or
DoorDash, like they do now. They can continue their same mode of operation, is my understanding.
Right.
And the AG's office explained that, again, you'd have to ask them when we asked that question, two ways. One, they said their lobbyists were at the table. Okay, I understand that. And two, they said there's a prior law, and I have a vague recollection of this post-pandemic, that said that, hey, delivery people can't raise the price from a restaurant's menu. And I think that's what's overriding that decision, because I don't really know how you would solve for it without, you know, see what I'm saying? They can't just artificially increase the price.
Right.
So that is that's kind of the tough thing there. But yes, they get to list their service charge. And a lot of hotels continue to list their taxes, like the TID stuff that the hotels pay. I know some of the car companies still got it okay to list out all their fees and stuff. Certainly the government clarified that whatever fees they apply, like look at your phone bill, right? They can still do it. Now, why can they still do it? Why is that a difference in how somebody absorbs information?
What do you say to the objection that some people have around calling out Healthy San Francisco? I mean, as you pointed out, lots of things increase the cost, right?
The healthcare security ordinance, you're
right. The healthcare security, yes. HCSO, that 3 to 5% add-on.
Well, that's the amount that the restaurant chooses to put on there to help offset the costs. There's no dictation or mandate. I mean, there is an ordinance that mandates we have the operators, all businesses, by the way, not just restaurants, have to comply with that healthcare ordinance, right?
Right.
So how it gets put on the menu or absorbed has been up to the operator up until now.
Right. Of course. And, you know, it's interesting. I was talking to a friend of mine about today's interview, and he seemed to believe that the surcharge was mandatory. And I had to explain, no, this is a thing
The reason for the surcharge is mandatory.
Right. But the way that restaurants pay for the underlying compliance is on them. They can do a surcharge. You could just pass the cost along on the menu items today. They choose to make it a surcharge to pay for the Healthy San Francisco, to pay for the HCSO.
Yeah, I just am really sensitive to semantics here. I've had numerous conversations. The restaurants have to pay for that mandate by spending a per dollar an hour rate on their employees, either $2.34 if you have less than 100 employees, even part-time, not even FTEs. Worldwide, you have to spend $2.34. If it's over 100 employees worldwide, even part-time, working more than 8 hours a week, you have to spend $3.51 an hour. How you bring in the revenue to pay for that is up to the restaurant.
Right.
But the spend is dictated. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. I do. Okay. The surcharge, but the choice to make it a surcharge versus bake it into the other cost is a restaurant-by-restaurant decision.
Currently, that is the case.
Decision.
Right. And that is what operators would like to continue to have the choice to do.
But as you pointed out, there are a number of other expenses that go up, like garbage collection, like energy,
water,
like the cost of food. I mean, minimum wage. There's a lot of these other expenses that restaurants sort of don't have a choice but to absorb, right? And so why just focus on the HCSO and not break out some of these other expenses? Or do you know what I mean? It seems like restaurant owners are picking on the HCSO as a thing that they want to sort of call out and say, sorry, we have to do this.
Well, that is an unusually mandated expense that I don't know of any other jurisdiction imposing on their businesses than San Francisco right now. There's no other city that requires that spend that I'm aware of. I could be wrong, but I'm not aware of that. So why not pass it through? I think you do see in some cases, restaurant operators say this is, you know, to offset the cost of doing business in San Francisco or things like that. So I have seen broader language. If you write that it's specifically for healthcare, then all of that money that you collect has to legally go towards that, right? And so, you know, it's just, I can tell you that it's just because psychologically, customers don't seem to feel the price shock as high as if it's integrated into the line item price.
You know, that's I do. And I can see that that's probably true. I mean, I don't, I haven't seen like an A/B study, but I would imagine that that people are more willing to pay $10 plus a 3% surcharge maybe than the total.
It's so the same reason that airlines, you know, do what they do. They add the baggage fees, they add the upcharge for the seating fees, they do all of that, you know, and whether that's going to be allowed going forward or not, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, the counter argument, and trust me, you know, even my husband's not a fan of surcharges, and I show him the financials, is to just raise the prices and see what happens. That's the counter argument.
Knowing that there's stuff still up in the air, there's still discussions going on, and we've got this July 1st date looming. What is the GGRA suggesting to owners? And
just wait. It doesn't take 2 months to change your menu. Try not to waste a lot of money calling your legal attorneys and talking for an hour. Just wait. Let's see what happens. Okay. There's a lot of smart people trying to get clarity on this. I really know that it's caused huge angst. Trust me. I have spoken with so many restaurant operators and a few people on the other side who have not been as friendly. Just try to wait. You know, this is going to get clarified. This is a huge change. This is a statewide thing, guys. This is not San Francisco's fault. I will just weigh in support of our city government. This is not our city government's fault. This is a state decision that I think, as most legislation I have learned, whether it's a state, federal, or local level, had well-meaning intentions. How it is being implemented and how it is being interpreted and what that means operationally is where things always break down in policy in my mind, right? Because oftentimes the people that are making the policy with the best intent do not truly understand how to operationalize it. And we learned this during the pandemic when I would have conversations with Dr. Aragon, who is the city's chief medical officer, and he was in control of things and he was very smart. And he would say, we want to do this. And I was like, yeah, that doesn't work. And he'd say, can you operationalize it for me? And I'm like, this is how it works in reality. And he's like, okay, let's go back and let's rethink it because this is what we want to have an outcome. And that is why it is critical that we have private and public folks that do policy communicate with each other. Prior to this happening, we would have saved so much angst and pain and potentially misunderstanding and potentially negative consequences. Had there just been the willingness to talk to each other, which I know like that is could a huge be a lift in our world today.
I was gonna say, that could be like the motto for Sacramento City motto. We have really
everybody government model. You have to have the private folks and the public folks at the table. And I believe that that was intended. You know, I believe that folks said, hey, we're trying to go after hidden fees. We're trying to go after drip pricing. We're trying to go after bait and switch. Right. And that everybody that I've talked to is 100% behind from an operator perspective. Everybody's behind. So the question comes in, is this much ado about nothing, or is this going to have a really negative impact on an already struggling industry? I just want to weigh in. We've seen that the sales tax numbers, when looked at from an inflation adjusted perspective, are still way down in the restaurant industry, particularly in mostly San Francisco. So I'm talking about San Francisco versus the pandemic. Big recovery outside of San Francisco, outside of the state of California. But in San Francisco, particularly, our sales tax numbers, I think, are down like 82%, the Chronicle had said, from before. And you can see people have pulled back. People have pulled back because there's been job loss, you guys, and that affects the people that can afford to dine out in a very expensive city. Now, why is it a very expensive city? Because of all of these other reasons, right? Plus inflation. Restaurants are losing money, right? Like, if sales stay flat and costs go up, you know, even those of us who don't have accounting backgrounds, we see it in our personal finances. We lose money. If you keep losing money, you got to close your doors. Now, there's a lot of people out there, hardcore capitalists, that'll say, that's life. And maybe that'll happen and maybe it won't. But we have real concerns about this. And there are definitely unintended consequences. And this will certainly affect disproportionately San Francisco, that has these ordinances and mandates for things that most businesses in the rest of the state aren't required to do.
That's our program. Thanks so much to Lori Thomas of the Golden Gate Restaurant Association for joining us. And thanks to you for listening. Catch us every week for more of the people and topics that matter to San Francisco. You can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and wherever you get your favorite podcast.
You can subscribe to our podcast and leave a review, which is very helpful. Don't forget to check out our sister podcast at The Voice by John Rothman, offering his daily commentary on San Francisco. Melissa and I will see you again next week. The Voice Weekly is a member of the Voice of San Francisco Podcast Network. All rights reserved.